In the morning to you, Corey.
Good morning, Todd.
Greetings and welcome, everybody. Welcome to what was Common Sense Revisited. You're listening to a pre-recorded podcast on the No Agenda stream at noagendastream.com. Today is Saturday, March 8th, 2014. We appreciate you joining us. Things have changed a little bit, Corey, since our last broadcast.
Yes, things have gotten better.
Yeah, wait, that's a good way to look at it. I like that. We're no longer on the Republic Broadcasting Network, the show that I broadcast to, with various folks for 4.5 years, is no longer on RBN. And with the advent of modern day technology and the great folks at that help support and keep the No Agenda stream running, we are coming at you still on every Saturday at 6 o'clock in the evening, Central Time, 4 o'clock West Coast time, with Agenda 31 on noagendastream.com.
I love it.
Yeah. It's a crucible, Corey. That's what I call it. You know, change comes hard in the country, as Neil Young sings, but we're pre-recording the show, everybody, on Saturday morning, March 8th, for playback this evening. We're not technologically adept yet to master all the tools that allow us to go live on No Agenda Stream. We were fortunate to have the good assistance of some of the producers like Gitmo Slave and Bear on No Agenda to pull the stream from RBN when we were live on RBN, and that's what was being played back on No Agenda. But now that we're not on RBN anymore, we're just raw, straight to No Agenda. So there's some things we cannot do anymore because we're not on RBN, but there's a lot of things we can do because we're not on RBN. And this is what No Agenda is all about. It's bringing you information, deconstruction, perspective, analysis, information that you're not going to get anywhere else. And Corey and I have talked about it on our show many times about a metric for freedom in these Gitmo states. There are 3,100 plus, 3,145 I think is the number, Corey, 3,100 plus counties in America across the land. And we've all heard of Agenda 21, you know, which is the plan that was hatched in the 80s, kind of a one world government agenda, if you will. It was all about centralized planning. If you've ever seen the movie Brazil, that would be a great example of the results of Agenda 21. The control of property, the control of labor. Agenda 21 is talked about often on the No Agenda stream, and as well as at Curry and Dvorak show No Agenda. And we like to turn Agenda 21 on its head and talk about Agenda 31, and that is measuring the freedom in 3,100 counties across America. It's kind of a voter's guide to freedom, should we call it, Corey? Or a a Zagat guide? You ever heard of Zagat?
I have. I think that's a great analogy.
Yeah. And the idea being that, you know, if you want to find out, you know, where are people living the freest, there's lots of metrics you could evaluate. You know, is there fluoride in the water in this county where you're looking at? You know, imagine if you could go to a web. Now, we haven't built this yet. This is a work in progress, but that's why we're going to have this venue to drive this this effort to measure freedom in 3,100 counties, Agenda 31. If you imagine, you can go to a website, Corey, and type in, you know, I want to look at the western states, and I want to look at show me all the counties that have municipalities where there's non-fluoridated water supply. Boom. Wouldn't that winnow your search down pretty good?
I think it would.
Yeah. You know, show me all the counties where the grand jury's identity is made public, and I can go to it and look at it right now. Oh, wow. That just, we're talking about levels of accountability. So
that's right.
That's our goal, and there's some, you know, this shift over to just straight No Agenda is empowering, because, you know, now we're dealing with the various tools that are available to us on the No Agenda stream, And, you know, at noagendastream.com, you'll see there's chat tools that we're going to try and take advantage of, Corey, so that listeners can, you know, we can, you know, have more, a little more direct interaction via chat. There's crowdsourcing tools available at itmbox.com. It's ITM stands for in the morning, itmbox.com, where I think we're going to try and launch a crowdsourcing on launching this Agenda 31 project. I have the URL, agenda31.org. Actually, if you go to test.agenda31.org, you'll see a Joomla site has been put up, and there's a manifesto there, if you will, of what Agenda 31 could be. I've been talking about this for a couple of years now with some folks.
Well, it's exciting stuff. I mean, there just is no information out there like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it is important. It's the antidote to Agenda 21.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And... you know, we're hopeful there's a migration of listeners. You know, if you've tuned into us on RBN and I've, you know, certainly plugged noagendastream.com enough that hopefully you will have, you know, just typed in your web browser, noagendastream.com, and now you're listening to us on No Agenda rather than RBN. So thirdrailblog.com is still my blog, if you will, that I have up. CoreyIbe.com is still Corey's website. We'll continue to post information there. We're a little bit all over the parking lot with our branding, if you will, and which website and so forth. And we endeavor to streamline that in terms of now that we have this, you know, 2 hours of just straight ahead, unedited. And our efforts in RBN were never edited. I don't want to misspeak there. It was live. And we hope to be live in the next week or two on this stream as well. So for now, we're pre-recording. We'll post this up at thirdrailblog.com. Hopefully, Bear and Gitmo Slave will have gotten my missives and we'll have teed this file up so that you're hearing it back on the No Agenda stream. And, you know, we have to tip a hat to the founders of No Agenda, you know, Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak. I mean, I'm an avid fan. I'm a producer, supporter. They do excellent journalism. They call it entertainment, you know, but it's really better journalism than anything going on out there. And, you know, there's lots of resources those guys have created over the years they've been doing this that are just really outstanding tools. Everything from the No Agenda show notes, where if you go there, nashownotes.com, and you just start browsing the directory that Adam puts together. I mean, it's a phenomenal resource. I mean, I do my show notes, Corey, at thirdrailblog.com, and it's, you know, kind of old school. It's just a regular, you know, read, you know, scroll down, you know, to get to the next headline. You know, and NA show notes is categorized and organized, and it's just it's a huge, really cool tool. There's noagendaplayer.com, which is another producer put together, and it's actually a audio player that has a directory of the topics on their show, and you can just jump to a topic, and it jumps you into the show, like, you know, say an hour into it, to write to that topic. So if you're trying to turn somebody on, as they call it, hit them in the mouth, No Agenda, you can, you know, just go right to a particular segment in the show and have that URL, that tiny URL, and you can send it to a friend and say, check this out, and just jumps them right into the soup. So noagendaplayer.com is an excellent resource. And I'm bringing these things up because these are examples of, you know, how we would want to empower people to engage with Agenda 31. And you know, the framework is still a little raw. You know, if you think about it for a second, you know, the No Agenda model is of the No Agenda show, I should say, Corey and Dvorak, is that they solicit donations and people send them money to support their efforts because it's a value for value model. And, you know, they have a whole peerage network where you become a knight and you can, you know, be a dame or a duke of a certain, you know, geographic area. And it's very tongue-in-cheek and fun, but still lends a little bit of structure to the situation and engages people with, you know, it gives them a sense of ownership in the product and the effort. And, you know, Corey, you know, I've been talking about it. I mean, we have 3,100 counties that we need to activate, if you
will.
That's
right.
You know, we're hopeful to have listeners in all 3,100 counties and engage listeners as producers or something. And I would propose that rather than Corey and I, you know, decide, you know, how it's all going to look and feel, that we just use this show to build it as we go. And you know, we don't have those tools built for this podcast or this this playback yet. I mean, you can go, certainly go to thirdrailblog.com and coreyibe.com and contact us through there if you want to get engaged. This model of bottom up, Corey, is not an old one. It's not a new one, I mean. It is an old one. It's just been the holy grail of anybody who's trying to organize to try and get people engaged from the bottom up. I mean, today in Scott County, Iowa, where I'm broadcasting from on the banks of the Mississippi River, is the Scott County Republican County Convention, Corey. Have you ever been to a political party convention?
Not since high school.
Yeah, I
got to tell you, in high school, the school that we were in, I went to Fallbrook High in Fallbrook, and it was so much fun. They had a convention similar to the nomination conventions for picking president and so forth, kind of indoctrinate the kids into, you know, how what a great political system we have. And it was a lot of fun in school. And then I went to a real political convention in San Diego, and I thought, well, this isn't what I was taught.
Yeah, exactly. It's I've been to many of them. I've been to the state convention. I've been a delegate all the way to the state level, and I've sat in the front row and center at a full state convention and just looked these hypocrites right in the eye. And what I'm getting at is the two-party political system has hijacked the bottom-up structure, because it's put, you know, that if you want to plug in, you have to go through one of these channels, you know, to, because there is a whole structure that goes all the way down to the precinct level, and it's available, and many people have tried to engage it in order to change the dynamic with regards to the overlords that we have, and they failed because the system is too corrupt. The system is too controlled. And I mean, it goes, I'll give you a, for instance, the last county convention I went to was was right before the last presidential election. And I went to it, and remember, this is Republican convention, and I'm sitting there and I look around and there's nothing but dozens and dozens of signs, you know, 2 feet wide, you know, three feet wide, 2 feet tall of, Obama's brand, you know, that really good, well put together circle, right, with the field and so forth, and, you know, stop Obama. And it was just like, wow. I mean, what a psyop on everybody here just to throw Obama's brand everywhere. I mean, the Democrats run Fox News is what it comes down to. It's their controlled opposition. So the reason I went on that jag is that the Agenda 31 is trying to deal with metrics that are about how to live free in your county. That's what we're trying to do. And we talk a lot on this show and have for the last couple of years about Corey's individual efforts out in Orange County to not identify himself as the birth certificate, which is a critical component. That's why we played the intro song, Don't Want to Be Your Slave. You know, I think that's a theme that resonates with the No Agenda listeners. And you know, hopefully you've, you know, listened to this show enough, you understand a modicum of what Corey's been up to. There's so many different directions we could go in here. I mean, in a nutshell, we're talking about how you identify yourself either as a piece of property or as a resident in the state you live. And Corey, why don't you give a quick rundown of that dynamic? Because you've really honed it well.
Well, it's very difficult for a lot of people to comprehend this. They have a difficult time. The first thing is being able to take the hypothetical seriously in order to get this argument off the ground and be able to contemplate it. And that is, what if, hypothetically, what if they took your birth certificate away? What if the government said, okay, nobody gets to use a birth certificate anymore, you're on your own. The only thing we're going to do is provide for the common defense, and other than that, you're all on your own. The question would be, how would you identify yourself? And I think that's a good thought exercise that can help people comprehend this, because the difficulty in this is the way we're trained from infancy all the way to death. You're taught to answer What's your first name? What's your last name? What's your date of birth? What city were you born in? Are you a resident? Are you a U.S. citizen? Are you in the United States? And all of those questions in the context of the way the United States government operates today is designed to brainwash you into answering in a incompetent manner and identifying yourself as a slave or property of the government. So the birth certificate itself is an interesting document. I see it as a weapon, just a weapon laying on the battlefield. And there is the eternal battle that was set up between the states and the federal government, that the federal government would always try and increase its power. And one of the ways they did that was by creating the birth certificate. Now, think about it. Has anyone ever held a gun to your head, or has anyone ever said, if you don't identify yourself as this person, you're going to go to jail? Well, I guess maybe the FBI has, because they wanted, I've seen references to the sovereign citizen movement and so forth. And that's not what this is. But the right to free speech is the self-identification going along with the right to free speech is so well established that when you go to court, you identify yourself. And when you go to a government office, you're the one that identifies yourself. If they didn't need you to voluntarily identify yourself as the person on the birth certificate, they wouldn't need your signature on the driver's license application. They wouldn't need your signature on the Social Security application. They wouldn't need your signature for the Selective Service registration card, all sorts of things. They would be able to just say, we've done this now for you. And separating yourself from the political obligations of the birth certificate is, I think, the most difficult part is the mental challenge. The idea that your entire life you've been taught that you are a certain person, and to realize that you need to operate in order to be free, in order to restrain government properly, in order to avail yourself of the secured rights that are in the Constitution, you cannot identify yourself as the person on the birth certificate for a number of reasons. First off, in common law, which this nation was the supreme law, or the rule of law in this nation, is the Constitution, and it's the it is formed within the common laws of England, and that's, you can look that up on the CIA World Factbook. Many references throughout government authority on what law is at the federal level, and it is the common laws of England. And in common law, a bastard does not have the right of inheritance. A bastard has no real effect on any politics. A bastard cannot rise to the level of being a citizen. There's a lot of reasons why you would never want to identify yourself as a bastard. And the person on the birth certificate is unambiguously an illegitimate child, because the mother identifies herself by her maiden name on that birth certificate and then signs it. Now, a lot of people use the wrong terminology in my mind. They say, oh, they did this to us. Well, they didn't. I could create a piece of paper right here that says certificate of ownership, Todd McGreevy. I could put your picture on it, and I could even get your mom to sign it. But that doesn't mean I own you, does it, Todd?
No, it doesn't.
In order for me to own you in this country, because I could, but I need your agreement. I would need you to say, oh yeah, that Corey's got title to me and he owns me, so I'll mow his lawn. Now, that would be a legal form of voluntary servitude. You certainly, that's supported in Supreme Court cases and so forth. But if you don't identify yourself as the person on the birth certificate, then, and the government forces you to identify yourself that way, now your remedy, which is in the Constitution, would be able to charge those authorities who are getting paid through government funding and trying to confiscate your property. You would be able to resist that with a very powerful move, and that is suing them in their individual capacity for earning profits from using titles of nobility, because the birth certificate, when you don't identify yourself as that person, it puts the government actor in a position where they are converting that document into a title of nobility and then earning a profit from it. And that's a very powerful way to force government to identify you as one of the people. Now, it's more than just saying you're not the birth certificate. It's a complicated citizenship in the United States of America is complicated. The laws are complicated. And being one of the people requires that you defend that position. And so it's certainly not something that you can just decide one day, oh, I'm not the person on the birth certificate and now government's going to leave me alone. I really doubt that. But I have found, for example, the Orange County Sheriff, Sandra Hutchins, is not known as a constitutional sheriff. That was not her campaign. That was not what she is really known as. But I have to say, she definitely knows her obligations to the Constitution as a sheriff. And the Orange County Sheriff has been fantastic with dealing with me as one of the people of California and honoring their obligation in the sheriff's office. Now, they get paid via the sheriff's department, but the constitutional obligation for them to uphold the Constitution as a public official or a peace officer in the original California 1849 Republic remains, and that title goes to the sheriff's office. And I think the Agenda 31 is just a brilliant concept that you put together, because in the individual counties, the sheriff is the highest authority in that county. And that's the way this nation was originally put together, was from the bottom up. Now, post-Civil War, of course, the moneyed powers at the top, they don't like that. There's nowhere near as many profits as there are when it's a top-down form of government. So they inverted everything and created a whole new set of states that, even though they're called states, like California State, and it operates off of a constitution of 1879, and the president declared that California State in 1879 was a Republican form of government, but that form of government does not qualify as a state in terms that the Constitution embraces the obligation for Washington, D.C. to provide a Republican form of government to it. Very complicated, and I don't know if I did a very good job of explaining it.
No, you did a great job. It's stuff we've hashed over many times, and it's worth repeating because it's just not something that you're being taught. We're programmed from the get-go. And we're talking about an ens legis entity. We've talked about this term before. At thirdrailblog.com, on the left side, you'll see a section called resources, and you'll see a link to ens legis definition down there right underneath Black's Law. We have links to Black's Law and Bouvier's Law Dictionary, Vattel's Law of Nations. These are all some of the resources that we access to help us with this breaking through this matrix, essentially. You know, according to lawdictionary.org, ens legis, which is derived from Black's Law Dictionary, it's an online version, it's Latin, a creature of the law, an artificial being, as contrasted with a natural person, applied to corporations, considered as deriving their existence entirely from law. And this law being that the birth certificate, you know, I guess the issuing a birth certificate, Corey, is not necessarily law, though, is it? It's,
well, the authority from which it is issued comes entirely from law. The for example, I mean, you had nothing to do with the creation of your birth certificate. It was something that was just created. Mm-hmm. And I know in California, in fact, this was a subject of several phone calls with officials over the last several months trying to figure out where the original certificate is. And I spoke with an official in Sacramento yesterday and found out where the original copy of the birth certificate is. And I do plan on going up to San Francisco to take a look, or Sacramento, to actually look at it. I want to see everything that's on there. And I've worked out the process to be able to view that.
You had to make two phone calls. You had to call two other agencies to get to that third area, if you will.
Well, I've called a lot more than that. The most recent was narrowing it down to two different agencies. Yeah.
Like a Mario Brothers game. You've navigated to the big bunch of bananas there. And let's hear. Do you mind if I play this recording you sent me? This is you calling the state vital records.
Let me set this up just a little bit in regards to the ENS Legis, because it mentions that it's applied to corporations. And that's the part that people have a difficult time understanding. California State, which operates off of a constitution of 1879, is a corporation. Mm-hmm. You can actually look up its credit rating on Dun & Bradstreet. And that corporation is a franchise. That corporation, known as the State of California, is a franchise of the federal corporation. And the birth certificate is property of that franchise. And if you use that franchise and have any profits from that franchise in California, you have to pay taxes to the franchise tax board. So that's something that follows all the way through. This definition definitely supports the description of the birth certificate. And then you identify yourself as that franchise that, through the 14th Amendment, has protections that no other type of corporation has really had in the annals of history that I'm aware of. So that gives some foundation for it, and hopefully now listening to this phone call, I think, will be helpful.
Thank you for calling the California Department of Public Health Vital Records. Your call may be monitored for quality assurance purposes. Answers to your questions may be provided more quickly by accessing our website at www.edph.ca.gov. To continue in English, press 1.
Gracias por llamar al Departamento del Registro Civil de...
Information. Have the vital key for a dot informating other customer.
And what I'm looking for... Order vital records. And what I'm looking to do is inspect the original birth certificate, not a certified copy or an image, but actually inspect the original. And I was wondering if you could tell me, they thought you guys own that. Is it you guys that own the original birth certificate?
You're trying to inspect it?
Yes.
I don't understand what you're asking for, what you're trying to do. I mean, we could help you get a copy of the birth certificate, but...
Right. California Public Records, the California Public Records Act, makes it clear that records are available during normal business hours for inspection. I want to see the original birth certificate, and the purpose of this call is to find out who owns that, because the San Bernardino County Clerk Recorder, they made it very clear that they don't own it, that it would be, they believed that it's vital records at the state that owns the original.
Yeah, I'm going to send you over to my supervisor just because I do not know how to deal with your request. So just one moment, please.
Okay, thank you.
Record, Lewis.
Hi, Lewis.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was given your number.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was given your number by the San Bernardino County Clerk Recorder Vital Records, and then I just spoke to a woman just now, and she transferred me to you. I'm looking to inspect the original birth certificate. Under the California Public Records Act, it says that public records are available for inspection during normal business hours. But I found out that the county clerk recorder, the vital records department down there, they don't own the original. So do you guys own the original?
We have it probably on film. I would assume that's what we would be on the film if the person was born in the state of California. When was the person born?
1969, and I'm not looking for I'm not looking for a copy. I want to inspect the original.
Well, I think there's a certain way you have to do that. You have to send a letter in requesting that.
The California the California Public Records Act is very clear that the request can be done orally. And because I'm not asking for you guys to give me a copy of any records, I'm asking for being able to actually go to your office and then inspect the original record, and that's enumerated in the I just need to know.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
I need to find out more information from whom you need to actually speak with.
Okay.
I cannot help you.
Okay.
Okay? So what is your name, sir?
My name's Corey. It's C-O-R-E-Y. And the
And what's your number of phone?
949.
Uh-huh.
334.
Okay.
7702.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to find a person that actually handles that and have them call you.
Okay. Would you be able to tell me, make sure I'm barking up the right tree, do you guys own the original birth certificate? Or does that get sent to another agency?
A birth certificate for any person born in the state of California, we will have the original either on film or it will be on the computer, one of the two.
Well, no, the original is a piece of paper that's signed. I'm not looking for...
Well, I don't know. All I know is that the only ones I've seen are on film, and they may have to request it from the record center. It may have been through the state record center. But it has to go through here. So I'm going to get the right person that you need to speak with
okay.
and have them call you.
Okay. That would be great. And could I get your name again?
My name's Lewis.
Lewis. And would you be able to give me an estimate of...
So these folks had never heard such a question before.
You know, it's pretty fascinating to see how the conditioning of the mind works because in both cases... I was just asking to inspect the original. It's not a very difficult concept. And it was they had a difficult time comprehending that by saying, well, the first lady, they're both nice, but just said, I don't understand what you're asking. And once again, when this gentleman, Lewis, responded, he said that anyone born in California, it's either the documents on microfilm or you can get a certified copy. It just goes to show the type of programming that happens. The follow-up phone call, which I did get a call from an official who identified where the original birth certificate is and that to view it, I'd have to go to Sacramento. She's worked there for 27 years, and this was the first time that anybody has ever asked to inspect the original document.
She told you that?
Oh, yeah, she told me that. And in fact... they don't even have an area for people to come in, for the public to come in and inspect the documents. She said they're going to have to find a cubicle and then assign somebody to basically watch their property to make sure I don't destroy it. And I mean, very nice. She wasn't mean or anything. Right. She's very professional, and I'm very grateful to the service they offered. They did a fantastic job. But the rules were such that they're going to have to figure out an area for me to view this document. It just doesn't even exist. So I thought that was quite fascinating.
It's amazing. I mean, California has the GDP of like some countries worldwide, right? And you're going into the state capital, correct?
That's right.
Yeah. Where they keep the bill of lading for all of the human resources that they own.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And I'm really curious because, you know, you go on the internet, you hear all these different stories about birth certificates and all these wild theories and everything. And at one point there were people talking about how when the Tower of Power in New York, when the basement flooded from the storm, that's where all the birth certificates were held and all sorts of things. And you would think with everybody talking about how, you know, we've been enslaved with this document, I find it amazing that this woman who is the compliance officer for vital records at the state has not received a single phone call for somebody to say, I just want to go down and view it.
Wow.
It'll be very curious when what all is actually on that certificate, because they Apparently, when they, and I don't know this is true or not, it's just something that it seems to be something that they do, is that not all the information on the birth certificate is supplied when they give you the certified copy.
Right, right.
And that's the part that I'm really interested in, is finding out what is the other information on there.
Well, we talked about it on previous shows. When it comes to automobiles and cars, and you think you have the title, you have a certificate of title, which is just a facsimile of the original title, which the manufacturer actually is in cahoots with the GovCo, the state government, which for purposes of this is a federal state. It's a subsidiary of DC.
Yes.
It's another aspect that people have to keep in mind, that, you know, this is why we're, why you can be enslaved. You've consented to domicile in the federal state, which is a subsidiary of DC, which is where, according to the Constitution, the government has exclusive legislative jurisdiction whatsoever. Sidebar for you, Corey. Tim from Illinois, I spoke to him this morning, and he shared with me he's found some case law that stipulates that that the Constitution does have, can apply in D.C. Law made in D.C. is not inapplicable to the Constitution. So it's like a double reverse.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so he's going to talk. He'll join us in the next show or two and bring us up to speed on that. But back to the whole thing about the certificate of title. And if you think about it, you know, just like a car title, it's a certificate of title. A birth certificate, when you get a copy and you request it, you know, whether it's your, quote, your own, the one that was assigned to you, or somebody else's, that's saying you're doing research about something or other, you're just getting a certificate of title. You're not getting the actual title. And title denotes ownership, does it not?
Well, in my understanding of looking at this from a point of view of being a common law country, you've heard the term possession is 9/10 of the law.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. There are so many aspects about the birth certificate. One, the state owns the original. And if that is the foundation of your identification, then you're identifying yourself as somebody else's property. That's the literal interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm.
The second part to it is the name construction being in the specific sequence of first, middle, last, does not identify you as one of the people, because as one of the people, you would be identified by your given in surname or given in family name. And then the third big whammy to that is being a bastard. The person on the birth certificate is a bastard in that the mother uses her maiden name and doesn't take the father's name, which in common law would make you an illegitimate child if you identify yourself as that person. And so there's numerous ways that you can exclude yourself from the secured rights in the Constitution by identifying yourself specifically as the person on the birth certificate.
Yes, you have these rights because you breathe air. That's what the Declaration of Independence essentially lays out. That was one of the, you know, kind of the shifting paradigms of world awareness. You know. And what you, and the Constitution is merely a document that has, as you use the word, secured. It is set up to say we're going to establish this government, and its role is to protect those rights you already have.
That's right.
Doesn't give you those rights. It protects the rights you already have. And so what we're asserting here is that when you are assigned a birth certificate, and you, of course, as an infant, you have no say in the matter, but as you get older and grow up and so forth, and you continue to identify yourself as the person on that birth certificate, you are consenting and volunteering into the servitude that we're talking about, the shut up slave, you know, status. I mean, we live in a beautiful, Corey, I mean, beautiful, gorgeous, open air prison.
It is the federal plantation.
Yes, and I mean I count my blessings every day. I'm not trying to take anything for granted here. You know, however, we all see that the hypocrisies that just go on and on and on. I mean, if you listen to this stream and you listen to the podcasters and the broadcasters on No Agenda, you know that the the hypocrisy and the tyranny. Let's back up to the birth certificate again. If you're like me, Corey, you know, by the way, I don't think we really did a proper identification. This is Todd McGreevy broadcasting from Scott County, Iowa, being joined by
Corey Ibe, broadcasting from behind the orange curtain in Irvine, California.
And we're bringing you Agenda 31 on the No Agenda stream. It's March 8th, 2014. This is a pre-recorded show. If you're like me, Corey, you've been accosted by a man in a blue costume with a badge and a gun on the side of the street, and just literally accosted and told that I had to immediately enunciate out loud verbally my first name, last name, and date of birth. And if you don't enunciate those that data to this costume guy with a badge and a gun, then that costume guy with a badge and a gun will open up what's called an investigation. Right there, just poof, investigation is open. And in Iowa, if you don't comply with the demands of that investigation, they're on the fly, and you're not told an investigation is being opened. It's just been opened. You just didn't know it. Then you can be arrested. Your body can be chained and put in the back of a squad car and taken to a jail cell for what's called interfering with official acts because you refused to provide identification. And what we're dealing with is there's a presumption. All of the GovCo employees are operating with the major presumption that you are a piece of property. And as a piece of property, you must tell them your first and last name and date of birth. If you think about it for a second, I mean, why does the government own the data or have on demand the right to the authority, the power, the right, whatever you want to use, to demand your date of birth? I mean, why is that a piece of information I must share?
Well, to play devil's advocate there, the way the country has evolved in its laws, the federal government, the people at the very top, along with the moneyed powers and the bankers, have gotten the country in such a situation that it is, I guess the best way to word it, they view everyone as a resident. And a resident of a state is a lower class than a citizen of the state. And a resident literally means something to be identified. So they go around just identifying everybody. That's the whole goal. The first thing they want to do is identify you. You can look on YouTube and you'll see all sorts of situations where people will respond to an officer who, for the tiniest reason, comes up and wants to identify somebody, and the guy says, why do I need to give you my identification? He goes, how am I going to know who you are unless I identify you?
Why do you need to know who I am?
Well, yeah, because they need to make money. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about, is just revenue production. Through the most skillful in history, just the most skillful way that the powers that be have been able to invert all of the secured protections in the Constitution by a combination of law and mass brainwashing to get people to think it's a good thing to be a resident. You know, if you want a discount on your college education in California, you have to be a resident of California. I mean, that's completely backwards. Nowhere in history has anyone ever viewed themselves as being a resident to being the proper thing, but by giving away, you know, benefits and so forth. You just need to identify yourself as a resident, because all of those benefits, going to college, going to school, going to elementary school, getting your driver's license, everything goes back to the specific name construction of first, middle, last, and your birth certificate or your immigration papers when you first immigrated and naturalized into the United States.
And for those that are new to this show and these topics, they're probably scratching their head going, I just can't. What's wrong with just telling the cop your name, you know, Todd? What's your problem? You know, you're just trying to be difficult, you know. And it would be one thing, Corey, if we lived in a society that didn't have the level of tyranny that's going on. I mean, this is the challenge. It's governments run amok. Governments,
exactly,
Gone wild. And it'd be one thing if we weren't droning and bombing brown-skinned people across the globe and murdering people. It would be one thing if we didn't have a black op budget that is in the billions of dollars with clandestine alphabet soup agencies running drugs globally, running black op assassination programs under the auspices of spreading democracy. It'd be one thing if we didn't have decades and decades of economic hitmen destroying countries and resources. It'd be one thing if blue-shirted pedophile wannabes weren't fondling people's old lady and young children's genitals at the checkpoint at the airport. It'd be one thing if we didn't have congressional elected people bankrolling their great grandchildren's fortunes through their insider trading at the we could go on and on and on. I mean, it is over the top. So it's got to start somewhere, and it can start right how you identify yourself. And to that end, we've talked about this on this show many times, and it's a common law ID is what Corey has coined it. It's create your own ID. Just get your mind around the concept of, you know what, I'm going to take control of how I identify myself.
And And you're going to own that document.
Yes. You own the certificate. You own the title. And it's very empowering. I'm telling you, it's a low risk, no risk is what it is. It's a no risk, high reward exercise.
Absolutely.
And if you want to check it out, you can just search engine Common Law ID. You can search engine Corey Ibe. You can go to CoreyIbe.com. You can go to thirdrailblog.com. On the left, you'll see a series of videos embedded there. And one of them is how to make your Common Law ID. And I want to circle back to your future trip to Sacramento. Let's fast forward and visualize this. I'm the GovCo official, right? And you're coming in and hello, Mr. Ibe. I've been waiting for you. I understand you were coming. This is a unique circumstance. We've never had anybody do this before. We have before we take you in into the area where you're going to be able to view this. Which birth certificate do you want to see?
I'll have that all written out. And I'll have my passport with me to make it the least amount of friction as possible. Mm-hmm. And I'll just show them the passport and then give them the first, middle, last name, date of birth, and the city that the person born into the state of California, which is the birth certificate, mm-hmm. is. So I would hand all that information over to them. And
would you associate your passport with that person?
No, not at all. In fact, the way the passport is in the specific name construction of given name and surname. So that's different than first, middle, last. On the application for my passport, you'll see that there is a clear distinction between the applicant, which is the birth certificate, I'm not that person, and the bearer of the passport. So you have somebody who has U.S. citizenship, which is the birth certificate, that is applying for a passport for me, who does not have U.S. citizenship. Well, I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm a citizen of California, 1849. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, actually going into that office, I really don't want to get into that issue with whoever is the gatekeeper with mm-hmm. the birth certificate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'll take advantage of the programming that I know they've been subjected to their whole life, and they're not even going to recognize the difference between the given and surname mm-hmm. that's on the passport. They're just going to see that and say, oh, that's you.
Yeah, you're not trying to win over any converts here. You actually just want to view the physical document.
That's it.
The goal.
The goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not trying to make waves at their job or even give them a headache by having them think about the difference between the two.
Go ahead.
I was going to say another example was when I was stopped at the beach in San Clemente. I was on the beach a few minutes past midnight. And the residents are not allowed to be on the beach after midnight, the way the law is. Mm-hmm. So
the residents who've consented,
that's right,
to be controlled by these statutes.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the officers, and this is in a recording that we've played on previous shows, and maybe we can take some excerpts from it in an upcoming show. But they wanted to know my first, middle, and last name, and I said I don't have a first, middle, and last name. My given and surname is Corey Ibe. and they could not write the citation. If there was no difference to it, and a lot of people will say, what's the difference? Well, if there's no difference, then scratch out that part on the citation that says first, middle, last, and then write in given and surname. Well, they can't do that because the rules governing how a notice to appear in related forms, which comes from the California Judicial Council, it has a specific rule that identifies that the name construction on any citation must be in first, middle, last. So you can't even show a passport in order to receive the benefit of a citation.
The benefit.
And it really is a benefit. And the reason why it was considered a benefit, if you go back, it makes sense. And it really is a benefit. But just like any government, it's always trying to expand its power and gain more and more money. When you get a citation, you're actually arrested. The moment the officer puts pen to paper, you're placed under arrest. Now,
it's true.
If they didn't have the ability to issue a citation, that means the officer would have to take you right then and there to a magistrate. So if you're on your way to dinner with your family and you roll through a stop sign, I would say it would be a benefit to get a citation instead of being taken to jail for the weekend. If it's Friday night,
right,
you're not going to see a judge
Good
until
call.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
I would much rather just get a citation and then deal with it later in a much more convenient way. And that's how the state came up with the idea for a citation a long time ago, which it was a benefit. They didn't have the tens of thousands of vehicle code laws at the time. And everybody thought, well, hey, that's way better for these minor little offenses that... You know, it's way better to get a citation.
I'll give them my pound of flesh in a few days.
Exactly. We'll do it when it's convenient for everybody and the officer makes the judgment call at the time that you're not a danger to society. This is an administrative thing. But rather than taking you to a judge, you just agree to handle it this way and show up to court later and we'll get it all handled. Well, when they pulled you over for true safety violations, when the reason for law enforcement to be out there issuing citations was truly based on safety, then that really is a benefit to be able to get a citation. I don't have a driver's license, so I don't qualify for that benefit. If an officer thinks that I have committed a crime and needs to arrest me, then I don't have the benefit of being able to get a citation anymore. They would have to take me to jail. Well, now it becomes a problem because they have made everything a crime. For instance, rolling through a stop sign at 3 miles an hour is not a criminal or arrestable offense. And so if you were to arrest somebody and take them to a magistrate and spend the weekend in jail over rolling through a stop sign, it's going to be a huge pain. It's going to be a lot of work, but you've set yourself up for a false arrest claim against the entity that did arrest you because there was no crime. And the state legislature in California has deemed it to be able to keep this cash cow going, known as traffic tickets, and be able to write you a citation for literally anything now. They can arrest you for something that is non-criminal and then issue a citation. But that doesn't allow them to arrest you and take you to a magistrate for something that's non-criminal.
So you're saying as one of the people of the several states, it doesn't apply to you.
That's right.
Yes, that's critical right there. And this is the struggle you're engaged in Orange County with what we've referred to as the Sunflower Seed Incident, arrested in that there was a citation issued with a first and last name construction, even though you never provided such a thing. And
in fact, I provided the opposite. With my situation, if an officer wants me to identify myself, I'm so confident in my position that I'm happy to identify myself because I understand the difference between a resident and being domiciled in one of the several states. And it's something that is to me important, but I readily will show an officer if I have it on me. I'll show an officer my identification right away. And what that does is it changes the game. The officer needs to have a harmed party. There needs to be a situation of imminent harm, or I've destroyed property, or something that is of a fairly, something that rises to the level of a real crime.
Where there's an injured party.
That's right.
Or the potential for an injured party.
Correct. Like, if I'm doing 50 miles an hour through a school zone, and there may not be an injured party, but the officer might be able to get a couple of people to sign an affidavit saying they saw me do that. Well, now that's creating a situation of imminent harm.
That's the term I was looking for, yeah.
That's right. And I could certainly be arrested and then put on trial and everything else for it. So it's not a free ride. It's not something that puts you above the law. It just puts you in a situation where it's a different form of law that is much more agreeable. It recognizes all of your secured rights that just happen to step on the street. I saw a video the other day of somebody being arrested because they stepped onto the street to ask the officer a question. And literally had only gotten maybe 2 feet off the curb. And the officer said, "You're jaywalking, turn around, put your hands behind your back." Well, in the franchise world of the federal government with the exclusive legislative jurisdiction whatsoever, yeah, you can be arrested and taken in for what is really not jaywalking, but they can term it jaywalking. In the several states, that type of behavior has been eliminated. It's your secured right to be able to travel and walk where you want as long as you're not creating a situation of imminent harm, impeding traffic, or you know, anything that rises to the level of a true crime.
Well, as our county sheriff has said out loud, and I've got a recording of it, our rights are modifiable in his view.
Yeah.
Well, if he's speaking collectively as the resident, the resident slaves, that's true. And that's who he is dealing with. He is dealing with the resident slaves. There's very few people who are one of the people of the several states, as you are, Corey, and as many of us are ascribing to be. It's just not, again, back to that presumption I'm talking about. These guys that are, militarized now, the police are very militarized or trained. You have to get DOB, date of birth, and sometimes they'll even ask you for social security. They'll just demand it on the fly. And, you know, if you don't have it, you know, then you're, an investigation could be opened up on you. And if you don't comply, you could be arrested, at least here in Iowa.
Well, there was a video of a young woman who was jogging, and this is on YouTube recently. I think it was Texas, Austin, or Dallas, or something. Just a young college girl, and she's jogging through town. She crossed the street, and nothing appeared out of the ordinary. And she walked by a shop where it might have been a donut shop, where there was some cops there, four of them. And they come out, stop her, a young, very attractive girl. They stop her, put her on the ground, and they ended up arresting her and taking her to jail for failure to identify. She didn't have any ID on her. She was jogging. I mean, that was never intended. It's insane. So
that's a classic example of what we're talking about. You know, you must have ID to breathe and walk around, I guess. And what if she had a common law ID? How would have that gone down? You know, Corey, we're right at this midway point of our podcast and broadcast, whatever you want to call it, our show. We're 1 hour into it. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more Agenda 31. This is Todd McGreevy and Corey Ibe, and I'm going to get the agenda31.org site going enough by the time this reaches the airwaves, Corey. People can check out the manifesto there at agenda31.org. We'll be back in just a little bit. Stay tuned. Yeah. are back, everybody, here on Agenda 31. Coming at you on No Agenda Stream and noagendastream.com. This is Todd McGreevy and Corey Ibe. We're in the second hour of our two-hour pre-recorded show on March 8th, 2014. We appreciate you listening and downloading this audio file and or podcast. I'm not really a podcaster yet, Corey. It's kind of a, I'm kind of a poser, frankly. I've managed numerous websites in my time and MP3 files, but true podcasting, I think, gets it up in a queue where people can subscribe to it as an RSS feed, technically. So
I did not know that.
Yeah. Just because you post an MP3 file somewhere doesn't mean you're a podcaster. So I say that in deference to the people who are true podcasters out there.
So I should take my podcasting hat off and I'll go grab my poser hat real quick.
Go get the poser hat. And we have I'm very excited about this new format. It's new to us. It's not new to the No Agenda Stream and the producers and broadcasters of No Agenda, but it's just a lot more freedom, and we're not dealing with commercial interruptions, which, you know, as a publisher of an independent newspaper for 20 plus years, I make a living selling advertising. So I'm not a hater of the advertising. It's a needed tool, in my humble opinion. It's information. People seek it out when they want it. And, so I'm not, nonetheless, with no commercials, this gives us a lot more free flow. And, you know, we're doing this because we're passionate about our subject matter. We want to live in a free, I just want to live in a free county. All right. I'm not worried about the country right now. I'm being very selfish. If I could live in a free county, I'd be very pleased.
Well, and that's the key to remedy is living in your free county, and that more and more counties do that, that begins to put the federal government and its ability to legislate directly on U.S. citizens and do all sorts of things. It puts them back in their box.
Yeah, they definitely need to be put back in their box. And, you talked about in the previous hour, you know, how you're very, because you're so confident in how you identify yourself and where you are domiciled, that you are one of the people of California 1849, which, by the way, you've pointed to the Supreme Court case, Texas v. White, as evidence that these jurisdictions do exist contemporaneously, that being Constitution of 1849 and the codified administrative constitution, or the constitution that outsourced administrative duties, if you will, of 1879, that they do coexist.
They do.
And
there is a real difference between the two. Like I mentioned earlier, the California, as defined by its constitution of 1849, is one of the states that's guaranteed a Republican form of government in the Constitution. California state, as defined by its Constitution of 1879, is not one of the states guaranteed by the Constitution to a Republican form of government.
It's a critical distinction.
And, huge.
And that guarantee of Republican form of government, we've talked about that on this show before with the help of Tim from Illinois. And if you go to thirdrailblog.com, you'll see those Supreme Court cases on the left side. We should dive into those again. I'm excited to play this clip coming up here. It's about 15 minutes long, and this is the Officer August clip is what I'd like to tease
great.
A little bit.
Yeah,
you know, because you've said that you're very confident and ready, willing, and able to defend your position. Peacefully is the key term here. Defend your position peacefully of who you are, how you identify yourself, and how you conduct yourself. And I've been privy to a lot that we haven't even aired on the show over the last 2 years we've worked together, Corey. I'm really impressed with how you do handle yourself. This we're gonna only play 15 minutes of this. I'm a geek about this subject matter, so it's riveting to me. And I guess if you're continuing to listen to this in the second hour, it might be riveting to you as well. But this is, I think, only 15 minutes of a 45-minute stop.
The entire stop was about an hour and a half.
Oh my!
Yeah. So there was all the silent period has been edited out. There's quite a bit of time where Officer August, who is the sergeant in charge of traffic operations in Irvine, reviewing documents and being very methodical about how he went about conducting himself at this stop. The audio starts after the stop has been initiated and after I've already given him a copy of my common law ID and some other documents that are designed to explain my position to give him an idea of where we're at. And it picks up when he comes right back to the car. And
a little more context, though, is that this is shortly after you obtained the California exempt license plate for the automobile that the state owns.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that's a critical distinction. And for people new to this subject matter, you know, Corey's trajectory, if you will, that got him here included rescinding his contractual obligations with the DMV, you know, canceling his – he goes into it, and so I want to give that away, but what I'm getting at is the reason he was even pulled over is because this guy saw a plate that he couldn't believe. It was exempt. It looked like government plates on a late model Mercedes.
That's right. In fact, the only time they are government plates. The only thing you see these plates on are government vehicles, buses, cop cars, anything to do with a government operation has these license plates on it. I obtained them for my car based on following law, not using, you know, very open about how I obtained the plates, but it is something that is so foreign to the brain conditioning that everyone's had that it really had the officers freaking out. So
yeah, we'll go ahead and play this.
Corey, are we still on terms where I can call you Corey?
Yeah.
Okay. Some of this paperwork I have not seen before, so I'm trying to understand it as best I can.
Okay.
Do you realize at one point you did acknowledge you had a driver's license in California because you did have one?
At one point, there was a license issued. I canceled it, and I can provide you a letter. I don't have it with me, but okay. I can provide you a letter from the DMV that it was being canceled.
Okay.
The reason why it was canceled is both my signature and the picture associated with that have been removed. It was that's part of a... What it is the manifestation of my displeasure with Washington, D.C.
Okay.
There's an element of political pledging with the application for a driver's license, and that's what has
been rescinded. So basically accepting the state's governance and over you and all that type of stuff? Or?
No, that's not it. The state exists legitimately, and that's not at all the question here. The question is authority, so in jurisdiction. I'm sorry, not authority, but jurisdiction. For example, I'll give you an example that is a pretty big deal up in L.A. I was involved in a case up in L.A., and there was an LAPD officer who I believed exceeded his jurisdiction. I was able to show that he did, and he acted as a peace officer or an officer of the state. And you'll find now that's changed the behavior of the L.A. County Recorder's Office.
Okay.
And Chief Beck acknowledged to me from his office and thanked me for bringing it to his attention that only the oaths of office are held at the county recorder's office only for officers of the state.
Okay.
Now, I think it's People versus Battle. I can't remember exactly, but the courts said that there are clearly two governments in each state.
Okay.
We have a state government and a federal government.
Okay.
The state government that we see today is a franchise of the federal government, as I mentioned before, by voluntary consent of the people, but that doesn't mean the original state government doesn't exist. And so what we have right now is my jurisdiction being in California 1849, doesn't give me a free ride. I'm still responsible to follow all the rules and everything, which is why there's plates on the car, why I gave you identification, everything else. But it means a different set of rules apply than what maybe, not what maybe, but what virtually every law enforcement officer that I've come in contact with realized, including LAPD. But now, with this example with LAPD, let's say I was standing on the sidewalk in front of Parker Center and they felt that I was a violation of LA City Code.
Okay.
They would have to call the sheriff and have the sheriff come in, because the sheriff has jurisdiction in the sheriff's department in California State 1879, but the sheriff's office, and their oaths are according to this, also has jurisdiction in California 1849, and that's why their oaths are held at the county recorder's office. So it wouldn't be that they couldn't do anything, but to properly process any charge that they would have to hold me like any other citizen and then have a sheriff come down and file a complaint.
So if you get, so does it differ if you get stopped by a deputy sheriff for a motor vehicle violation?
No, because the motor vehicle violation would, are you familiar with California Vehicle Code 21052?
Which one is that?
It covers who the code applies to.
Okay.
And
I'll look it up.
Okay.
Didn't you say that we had, you had not had contact with us before?
The word contact has a very specific meaning, so I'm not recalling a contact with Irvine PD.
Okay.
I've talked to Irvine PD.
I mean, have you ever been stopped by Irvine PD?
Not that
issued a citation?
Not that I recall. A parking ticket.
No, I'm talking traffic stops, where you received a citation and filed a suit against one of our officers or threatened to file a suit.
No.
Okay.
No, look, I'm very careful about making sure it's not personal.
Okay.
Right?
He's relying on his training that you might be a sovereign citizen, Corey.
Well, and I think what might have gotten around or brought up that comment was a parking ticket that I had received from Irvine and responded with, and this is on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/CoreyIbe. You can see how I handled the parking ticket. Somehow maybe one of the dispatchers or something said, you know, hey, this guy tried to sue us or whatever. And that wasn't the case at all. It was simply with the parking ticket that, okay, I'll conditionally accept this ticket, but if you go ahead and let me pay it at the DMV, then you guys are going to owe me a whole bunch of money. And they ended up not transferring that ticket to the Department of Motor Vehicles. So that's the only contact or interaction I'd had with Irvine Police Department prior to this stop with Officer August.
Relax. Sorry, she's hungry.
What's that?
She's hungry, sorry.
Oh, okay. You live in Laguna? Is that where you stay?
Well, that is a mailing address that I use, and I keep where I sleep at night very private.
It's a P.O. box.
Yeah.
Well, let me finish up my research, and we'll get you on your way.
Okay.
Is that fair?
I appreciate your service, and however I can help.
All right. Thanks, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Corey?
Yeah.
So you were saying this is the first time that a private vehicle's ever been given an exempt license status?
That I'm aware of.
Okay, because it looks like you just got this done recently, because when I run the VIN number, it comes back to another plate that has expired registration, but it shows this is in process. You just had this issued like a week ago, a week and a half?
I think it was May 16th or so.
Okay.
That's after nearly 3 years of dealing with the DMV.
Really?
Yeah.
With the same car?
Not the same car, just the same issue.
Same issue?
Right.
Okay. And why do they finally issue you the exempt license plate?
Because the director, George Valverde, faced losing his job if he didn't do it.
I'm not trying to give you a hard time. I'm just trying to figure out and make sense of this.
I can appreciate that this can be a difficult stop for you. And so my goal as one of the people of California is to affect government in a positive way.
Okay.
So I hope that this is a positive contact.
No, you've been very, very polite because, like I said, we officers and myself have stopped people who claim to be sovereign citizens.
Right.
They put very different stuff on, and they're very, very argumentative and very confrontational. So I appreciate your candor and the way you've been treating this.
Thank
you. Allowing me the time to kind of research this a little bit, so I make an appropriate decision on how I'm going to proceed, which is in our both of our best interests. If that's okay with you, if you don't mind, give me a couple minutes to do that.
Absolutely.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
All right. Is your dog going to survive?
I think she'll make it. She's impatient, but
yeah, she doesn't look like. She kind of looks like she could stand a meal. She's on the petite side.
Yeah, she was a rescue.
Rescue dogs are great. I rescued a German Shepherd.
Awesome.
From the German Shepherd rescue about 12 years ago, and she was just about 7 weeks old.
Right.
And she has been the best dog.
Yeah.
By far the best dog.
Yeah, she's a little skittish. I think that's just her breed, but she's been a good dog.
How long have you had her?
Oh, well, she's actually my girlfriend's dog.
Oh, okay.
But, 3.5 years.
Well, she looks like she's fond of you.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's a little, I play a lot of disc golf at the Deerfield disc golf park.
Okay.
So that's her favorite time of day.
So you come out here and do that?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost every day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never played that before.
Oh, really?
Is it a good time?
It is the best.
How do you play it?
So it's just like golf. You got these discs here. Okay. They're, you can tell they're a little bit, they're different than a regular Frisbee disc.
Sure.
Yeah. But they, and they have different
ways. So I didn't know you gave I forgot that you'd given a lesson on disc golf on the side of the road, Corey.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great stop.
Yeah. While they're talking about that, who's the guy that almost lost his job? The director of what?
Well, the George Valverde is the director of the DMV, and I had positioned it such that if they did not issue the plates, my next step was to go after his job for illegally levying upon property, which is enumerated in the law that is a crime, and if you're convicted of that crime, you would lose your job. So getting those plates issued, if they decided that they were going to say, no, we're not going to issue the plates and we want money from you, I was prepared to go after the job of the director of the DMV.
And for clarification, the plates that were issued were exempt California plates. And I've seen the actual registration. I think you've posted it out there in the ether, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
If you search engine, you know, Corey Ibe exempt, you know, CA plates, you know, you'll probably find it. It says there, you know, amount for the registration, zero, and then until like, what, 2099 or something like that?
That's right, yeah. And something that is fascinating amongst people who want to be able to travel is there is a huge amount of case law that says the government cannot regulate the use of an automobile, classifies an automobile as personal goods, so many things that are geared towards an automobile. Yet our conditioning is such that a lot of people don't realize that your car with the registration tags on it is not an automobile. It's a passenger vehicle. So you have to, no different. You're, in fact, in a passenger vehicle, you are allowed to be paid money to transport passengers around. And that's a new industry that has popped up here in Orange County and I think all over the country, where it's an alternative to taxis.
Mm-hmm.
That somebody can contact you from an internet connection or something like that, and you can go and pick them up in your personal passenger car.
Yeah.
They pay you money, and you take them wherever they want. You have the license for it. The registration covers that type of activity. But an automobile would not qualify for that. An automobile is personal goods. And the registration clearly says automobile, permanent, exempt.
And so the DMV issued this exempt plate because they considered it to be a personal, or because you, through the use of your very carefully controlled signature as the representative of the birth certificate, showed them that the birth certificate is owned by the government, as is the automobile, the car, the vehicle, and subsequently it is a government vehicle. I thought that was what your approach was.
It was. Well, the birth certificate, that person is government property, mm-hmm. and that's who the automobile is registered to.
Mm-hmm.
In paperwork that I have, which was filed at the Secretary of State, I have a financial interest in that person, but it's not me. I'm not that person. So the registration went to a government entity, which is very compliant with law. It's very clear that there shall be no registration upon state or federal property. And the birth certificate is state property, which is federal. And it was really no problem at the DMV to get it issued. Now, before I had gone in there to get those plates, I think it's important to note that the driver's license had been rescinded, and I no longer occupied the political office of the birth certificate, leaving it as just property of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a relatively pain-free operation going in. It took all of maybe 10 to 12 minutes in order to get the plates issued. They challenged me on it, and I responded that the registration was going to an individual, because that's what the birth certificate is. It's an individual, and it's property of the state of California. And so when they asked me, what is this? I said, it's an individual property of the state of California. And my signature at the bottom is clear that I'm not that person. I am the authorized representative of that office. And it was no problem getting the plates issued.
Yeah, that was a big deal. And that was the culmination of an odyssey of, as you said to Officer August, years of effort. And And so this, if I there's 7 minutes left, I do want to play this because I think it's worthy of hearing. And but this stop, he pulled you over because clearly he just had never seen this before, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So there was no supposed infraction, like your left turn signal didn't work, or you were weaving, or anything like that.
Right. It simply was that when they saw that it. It's not a typical government vehicle. It was an old Mercedes 300E. Mm-hmm. Pretty obvious that it's not owned by what they consider an agency of the government, like Rapid Transit District. It's not a police car. Right. It's not anything like that. It's just an automobile, which is classified as personal goods. And so he pulled me over for that. So the stop itself, I never brought this up, especially given the behavior of Officer August. His conduct was exemplary during the entire stop. And so I never brought up the issue that it was illegal for him to pull me over because he thought that, the plates were wrong.
Right.
It's all a learning process, being the first one in California that I'm aware of to be able to obtain this type of plate. Is certainly going to garner attention. 2 days before this stop, I was actually traveling through Huntington Beach and had quite a circus, so to speak, of at least a dozen cop cars that had kind of surrounded me as I was leaving the town. They didn't pull me over or stop me, and I did have a conversation with the watch commander at the time. And their attitude was clear that their thought was, we have a sovereign citizen here. And, the different police agencies, I'm sure, communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. So that may have been something that, was communicated to Irvine or even put a lookout for the plate. And with all the cameras they've got everywhere, it wasn't hard for them to find me. Mm-hmm. And that's where this stop came about.
Let me just finish this up and I'll have you out of here.
Okay.
I'm not inclined, based on what I'm seeing thus far, to issue a citation. But I would like to do as much research so I can at least share it with some of the people that work for me.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, I'm happy to give you my contact information.
Okay.
If command structure at Irvine would like me to come in. I just got back a few days ago, met with Investigator Taft from the Orange County Sheriff's
Office. Sheriff's Department, okay.
And went in. We had an hour and a half to kind of go over everything because this is all new to them.
Yeah.
And I actually have an engagement going on with one of their officers that
As a result started, of an issue?
As a result
a
of an issue,
or?
A contact,
okay.
Where he decided that he was going to just go ahead and push through with a citation. And I complied all the way through.
Sure.
Once I signed it, then it was like, okay, now we're going to go to court and talk about it. And okay. So while we were there, he gave me back some of the property that was confiscated. And we had a good opportunity because, like I say, my goal is to, from my perspective, I think government needs to change behavior in mm-hmm. certain areas. And in order to have the legal foundation to affect that kind of change, it requires converting my status into being one of the people.
Okay.
And with that must be very strange to law enforcement.
It is. It's, yeah. It's a little unusual, so I'm trying to gain an understanding of it and being respectful of what you're trying to accomplish and what your beliefs are
right.
while balancing my responsibilities, but also making sure that we learn appropriately how to handle situations like this. And we run into situations where someone's as compliant and cooperative and willing to talk about
right.
what you're all about. It's an opportunity for us to learn, so... I'm sure these stops become very prolonged for you when you do have contact with the police, but
yeah.
I'm trying to be as respectful and polite as I can. I appreciate the
Believe
the
me,
demeanor.
I knew what I was doing. This is not something that I did.
Oh,
really
I'm
know
sure.
It, so.
I can't imagine you just go out and say, well, we'll see what happens today. It's just,
well, first off, if you just go into the DMV, they're not going to issue these plates.
Sure. I'm sure it's just taking, like you said, several years worth of work and a lot of research and a lot of documentation. So
Exactly. Very
unique.
Part of the job is going to involve these types of contact.
Right.
And I look at it as an opportunity as well to show how our government grows over time, how our nation matures, and this may be a process of it.
Okay. Okay, but you are willing to come in and talk and do all that type
Absolutely.
Of stuff?
Absolutely. I'd be honored to come in and talk.
So,
let me... I'll give you my card if you want my card.
You have a card?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the cell phone number and your email?
Yeah. Okay. It actually rings to my cell phone.
Oh, okay.
If I'm out of the area, it'll go to voicemail and then send me an email.
And then these are blogs that you post on? Or?
Yeah, I got some YouTube videos, and you'll notice every single one, everything that I do. I'm very pro-law enforcement.
Okay.
I'm very anti those guys that say don't roll your windows down, stuff like that. I say the exact opposite.
Okay.
I want to treat things like... What if my great-grandfather were here and he was getting and I was with him? He'd be upset if I didn't.
Sure.
Exactly. So that's the
Well, so far based upon our interaction in the last handful of minutes, how do you think things are going from our interaction?
Fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let me see.
Can I ask you how you feel the same way?
I mean, it's obviously a unique situation from my perspective, but I feel very comfortable with our conversation and I appreciate you taking the time to help educate us.
Great.
And develop an understanding, and it's refreshing to have some traffic stops are confrontational anyway, and I've been doing this a long time and I don't feel they need to be, so I try to approach everyone politely and respectfully and give people an explanation of what I'm doing, but it's a mutual exchange of information, and when we happen upon a situation like this where documentation starts coming that is very, very abnormal for us.
Right.
I want to make sure I understand it so I can make the best informed decision I can. But when I have an opportunity to learn from somebody, and I'm not comparing you, but when we contact gang members,
right,
and people who've done hard time in prison, a lot of, you know, there are some officers that I will argue that are not very respectful, that treat them like dirt,
right,
because of the mistakes they've made in the past and some of their conduct. And I mean, you know, who's to say what kind of people they are now? Maybe some will continue on a life of crime. But you get more flies with honey than you do with vinegar.
Right.
And you show them a little respect. A lot of them are willing to educate you. They'll talk about what it's like to be in the joint. They'll talk about what the tattoos mean, this and the symbolism, and what that means to them and their culture and their gang culture and, you know, some of the different types of things that they're involved in. And it's an educational process. So that's how we learn.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah. And I tell you what. I'm really appreciative of you guys out there because there's a lot of really bad guys out there, and so I appreciate the time to.
Oh, you know what? Do you mind? One of our detectives has stopped by to see what's going on.
Okay.
He's actually very, very intelligent. I think he would like an opportunity to talk to you. Do you mind talking to him too?
No.
But I'm gonna hold on to your card.
Okay.
And
could I get your card?
Absolutely. Detective Moore.
Hey. Sorry about that. She's harmless.
There you are, sir.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let me just talk to him for real briefly, and I'll have him chat with you.
Okay.
And look for an email from me, because I do
Wonderful.
Appreciate your time, all right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Got a minute and a half left here.
Hey, Corey.
Good afternoon.
Hey, I'm sorry. How do I say your last name again?
Well, it's a family name, and you can just call me Corey. It's pronounced Ibe.
Ibe, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that.
No worries.
I'm a detective that generally deals with the license plates
okay.
and stuff, and
yeah.
I'm curious about your exempt plate.
Okay.
Can I ask you a few questions?
Sure. About yeah. That? If we get into a territory where I have to be careful, I'll let you know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just talking to you. So
beautiful.
You talk to me, we'll just be two people talking to each other. All right. I see you have your registration here. What? When did you get the plate?
It says right on there, I think it was the 16th of this month.
Oh, it was this month you got it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So you got it this month.
Yes.
And what office did you get it out of?
Costa Mesa.
Costa Mesa. Okay. Did you do it by mail or did you go in?
Went
there
in. They don't do these things by mail.
Okay. And then, so you did it by mail. and then...
No. Didn't do it by mail.
No, I did not do it by mail.
I'm sorry.
That's... It's a difficult time, difficult thing to understand.
It's been a long day for me. I apologize.
Fair enough.
So you went in there and did it, and then...
It's been a long day, and you just blew his mind. He'd never seen such a document before.
Right.
And, wow, that... Again, I'd listened to the full, I think what you had parsed out of the hour and a half stop was 45 minutes of interchange between you and August. And, you know, it's funny how names mean something. I mean, you know, an August, you know, occasion. This was an August occasion, Corey. You had a encounter by the side of the road that most of us abhor and are fearful of, and you know, the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song, you know, comes to mind, you know, seeing, you know, lights in your rearview mirror. And the guy was totally cool.
He was. And I have to tell you, I the audio, I can hear things in my voice, but I was very nervous. I had never been stopped before. I didn't know if I was going to be taken off to jail. And in this game, you have to be ready to be able to deal with that. And mentally, I'm ready to spend some time in jail, that I would stay calm and be very professional throughout the entire ordeal. But throughout that entire contact, I was worried that the officer might feel it necessary that I was going to have to be taken in. And that's a nerve-wracking time. So being able to stay calm, keep my hands on the steering wheel, be polite. It has served me well to consciously make the effort to stay calm, breathe deep, talk slowly, and do the best I can to inspire any officer that I come in contact with to honor his oath.
So there's so little things like, what's your last name? You know, I mean, you know, if you had answered, you know, it's I, well, then you've again consented that you have a last name, and subsequently, you know, they own the last name. It's right there on the birth certificate, the last name. And so now you've re-consented to be property.
That's right.
These are the little things. And it may, you know, people may go, you know, this is all just a bunch of nonsense. You know, how can you, I mean, I'm sorry, everybody. These things matter. They matter significantly. And it's a Byzantine system that we've allowed to grow up around us. For some more context, your plates, the plates, I should say, that you obtained to put on the back of this government-owned car, because the government owns all the cars driving around in California.
They do. Yep.
They own every
single
one.
They just rent them back to you.
That's right. You just rent them back. You go pay the registration to rent the use of it. And that's, you know, just look up MCO. You know, what's that stand for, Corey? The
Manufacturer's Certificate of Origin. Sometimes it's also MSO, which means Manufacturer's Statement of Origin, which is the birth certificate to your car. Yep. If anybody goes out and buys a new car, as you're signing all those different documents, you'll see part of the process is you turn title of the vehicle over to the state. And that comes from when you purchase the car brand new from the dealer, you're going to take the car's birth certificate and sign over all the interest in the car to the state, and then begin to pay rent to the state for using the car, as well as paying for the automobile itself.
It's a hell of a racket.
Yeah. And it started from a time when people really trusted government. You know, inherently everybody knows government needs to have revenue in order to run. And the thought of registering automobiles this way, people didn't realize how dangerous it would become, how much power you turn over to the government when you allow them to do what they've done with automobile registration and driver's licenses and things. It started out very innocuously, very simple, and it took advantage of the people's goodwill towards their government at the beginning of the 20th century, when automobiles were first put on the scene. And clearly the government knew right away that, oh, this is going to be a cash cow. This would be something they can make huge amounts of money on. And anytime they need more money, they just add another fee to your registration.
You know, the one of the early presidents, and I don't call him the first president, Corey, because there were, I think, 7 or 8 presidents prior to George Washington. We're just not taught about those presidents.
That's right.
George Washington was purportedly stated, he's been quoted as saying, it's a fairly famous statement, "Government is not reason. It is not eloquent. It is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master." And that is, you know, the example, the trajectory of the DMV and the whole ownership of cars and vehicles is a classic example of that. So meanwhile, you were able to you know, travel on your way. They left you unmolested, didn't issue a citation, correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit more on the tape there. I did order the official recording. You know, the detective Moore, in the brief moment when Officer August was explaining to Detective Moore kind of the situation, and he said he was not inclined to give me a citation, Officer Moore told him, "You have to give him a ticket. He doesn't have a license." And that is something that is interesting in the 1879 Constitution to show you how devious this is. In the Constitution for the state of California, 1879, it says that an agency may not enforce a law based on constitutional grounds unless the appellate court has said you can't enforce a law on constitutional grounds. So the government has gone through, the powers that be have bound officers to where their job could be in jeopardy for not giving you a ticket or not enforcing the law. And I mean, how crazy is that, to take the ability for an officer to decide whether or not something is constitutional at that moment, take that away from him?
An oath he's sworn to uphold.
Exactly. He's sworn to uphold the Constitution, yet he can be fired, have his career impacted severely for following the Constitution. And you know, this might be a good time to bring that up. I have a feeling that Officer August, for what he did at the side of the road there, I think he has been affected negatively for this. Mm-hmm. With Irvine PD. I've not been able to get in touch with him. His contact information has been moved. It still shows that he's an officer there, but I fear that he may have had to pay a price for in his professional career for following the Constitution and having a stop that went about this way. He didn't identify a crime that was an arrestable offense that he would be able to come up with a harm party or fraud or anything like that. And he followed the law and let me go.
Well, if you're inclined, if you're listening to this pre-recorded show of Agenda 31 and you're inclined to participate in some level, you can call the non-emergency Irvine Police Department number, which is area code 949-724-7000, 949-724-7000. And, you know, ask to speak to Officer Matt August and see if you can get him on the line and thank him for how he treated Corey on the road. I think this was in May of last year.
It was July, I believe, of last year.
Summer of 2013. And, you know, that he recognized Corey as one of the people of California 1849 and treated him as such. Since this happened, those plates mysteriously disappeared from that car, didn't it, Corey?
Well, it's not mysterious. About 2 weeks later, there was a setup. I was traveling again to go play disc golf, and I was stopped by Officer Moore, not to be confused with Detective Moore, but Officer Moore. And he couldn't be more opposite than Officer August in his interest in looking at the totality of circumstances. He pulled me over, and the first question was, "What's up with the plates?" I gave him all of my information, the same information that I gave to Officer August, and he just ignored all of it, wrote a citation, which means I was placed under arrest and charged in the specific sequence of first, middle, last, which is, like I said earlier, a benefit I don't qualify for. I controlled the signature on the citation, And I don't know if we have enough time today, but maybe another show we can go into a little bit deeper on that. But he did issue a citation, and he did it in such a way that I faced potential jail time, up to a year in jail for driving without a license and a misdemeanor. The district attorney refused to prosecute that case, and it then proceeded as an infraction where the officer came in and provided evidence that was perjury in nature. He committed perjury, literally. But the way the traffic courts are set up, it's impossible in the traffic court, at least for my ability, my limited legal ability, it was impossible to prove anything. And on top of that, the judge, or he's actually a commissioner during the traffic trial, refused exculpatory evidence that would tend to show my innocence. He wouldn't allow that on the record. So that is currently pending an appeal. And that went all the way back to, it was the middle of June. It was August 1st that they actually confiscated the plates the day that I was doing an appearance in court. They came out to the house and confiscated the license plates. And to see how much this is kind of boiled over into a real problem for everybody in government. The DMV has now falsified records to try and support the confiscation of the plates. They're hiding the person who ordered the plates be taken back. They've falsified the dates on certain records that they created, which I can prove. And now it's the laborious way of dealing with government and the Public Records Act and forcing all of this to be out in the open that I intend to show there was a conspiracy to deny me my secured right to domicile within California. The Irvine Police Department sent a letter that said that they consider this matter concluded, and I interpreted that as, you know, leave us alone. But that's not what's going to happen. Anytime an officer lies, the officer Moore, who issued the citation 2 weeks after this stop that we just heard, he falsified public records when I ordered the dash cam video. He sent video of a cop car parked in a shopping center parking lot for 40 minutes. It has nothing to do with the stop. He lied about an amendment to the citation because the court, again, I carefully controlled my signature on the citation, and the court rejected the citation. So he filed an amendment, which was kind of a loophole that allows an officer to force a traffic trial without a citation.
Without consent.
And without consent and without any resemblance of truth, it's able to force a traffic trial where there is no citation. And
this
so,
is because he's dealing with what he considers to be the first, middle, and last name construction of the property that his employer owns.
That's right. And anything to the contrary of that, he just is not going to recognize. And a big part of it, too, is now I've uncovered through this that the chief of police was never appointed by the city council. It was a corrupt appointment through the city manager, which the law in the form of government that Irvine is, the law is very clear that they want to separate the city manager from the chief of police, that those two offices must be completely separate. And if you allow them, if you allow the city manager to control the chief of police, now the city council has no real power at all. The city manager is really the dictator over the city. Mm-hmm. And in Irvine, there is incredible amounts of corruption. And just my existence of traveling in a car with exempt plates, using my given and surname, and being domiciled in California 1849 exposes the corrupt nature of the people that are high up in government in Irvine and the more than $100 million that they've stolen from the Great Park.
You know, let's rewind a second on the Officer Moore. We call it the Sunflower Seed incident because that was his supposed premise of kidnapping you via a citation.
That's right.
And that was you were spitting sunflower seeds out the window or the husks of seeds. And he tried to do a littering thing. But what I'm getting at is, let's go back to what you talked about at the very beginning of the show, Corey, and this concept of evaluating a hypothetical. How did you put that again?
Well, in order to get, you know, freedom is a moral argument. And if you want to discuss the issue of freedom as a moral argument, it's important to take the hypothetical seriously.
There you go. Take the hypothetical seriously. And so let's take the hypothetical that an individual is brought into this world, never issued a birth certificate, never issued a social security number, never goes to a public school, never consents along the way to any of the GovCo adhesion contracts that are out there, and actually gets inside an automobile, all right, and traverses down the road and is pulled over by officer and spits sunflower seeds out the window, the husks of seeds out the window, and is pulled over by Officer Moore, all right, you know, under threat of, you know, duress, essentially, you know, flashing lights and guns. I mean, if you don't pull over, he'll call in backup and there'll be a, you know, a car chase and they'll stop you and, you know, get their guns out, right? I mean,
right.
You got to pull over. This is force. This is coercion, all right?
Yeah.
So then he rolls up on this hypothetical individual, and there's no record of this individual.
Right.
That's what we're talking about. This is the hypothetical. This is the status that Corey has achieved through lots of, you know, effort, and it's not a fun road to hoe.
Yeah, it certainly has not been profitable. I think it's vitally important, but it's something that I believe in order to prevent the Agenda 21 onslaught on our nation, the rise of tyranny and just the absolute domination from federal government, that this is the path that has to be taken, and that is to reinstitute the original form of government that the founding fathers saw fit to put in place, where the federal government is separated from the people and cannot directly legislate upon the people.
I don't think the general populace, I mean, obviously the general populace, but I mean, even those who are trying to pay close attention and rail against the poor, bad behavior of government understand just how deep the federal government's claws have gotten into your local community. You have a letter from the chief of police of LA essentially verifying that the so-called sworn officers of the LA Police Department are not state officers of California. They are, in fact, federal municipal officers.
That's correct. Yeah, the law is clear that peace officers must file their oath at the county recorder's office. And an LAPD officer, some of the LAPD officers had their oath at the county recorder and some didn't. And one officer that I had a contact with, it was a consensual contact, but he did conduct himself in a manner as being an officer of the state or a peace officer of California 1849. Mm-hmm. And his oath was not at the county recorder's office. So I had engaged with LAPD on this issue as well as the county recorder, and that changed the behavior of both agencies. The county recorder will no longer record documents from an LA police officer. It's a non-recordable document, and LAPD sent a letter identifying that LAPD officers are not officers of the state. They are security guards for the federal corporation.
That's right. That's exactly what it is.
And I want this to be, I think this is really important. Chief Charlie Beck, I believe, in my contact with him, he wants to get it right. The federal corporation is allowed to have their security officers. They're allowed to have their own citizens. They're allowed to have all of this. They're just not allowed to force you into it against your will.
And the presumption remains that everybody walking around is federal property, and subsequently the federal security forces are going to treat you as such. I published an independent newspaper called the River Cities Reader. The website's rcreader.com, have for over 20 years now. And we wrote a column recently about the fire department getting a Homeland Security grant to hire two new firemen. Now, just that in and of itself is kind of interesting on its face. I mean, why is Homeland Security, you know, taking tax dollars or future tax dollars of our great-great-grandchildren, because all they did was print ones and zeros, and funding a fire department in Davenport, Iowa?
Well, there's strings attached to that funding.
And that's exactly what we wrote about, was you guys need to read the fine print. What authority have you ceded by taking these grants? And I had a fireman come up to me the other day and say he read this and it's been talked about, and we didn't go far enough. He wants to know, what did they give up? And
yeah,
I happened another friend who's a, we call her the honey badger. She went to a, what's the 911, you know, the emergency call center. All right. They have a thing called the 911 commission here. And it's about the 911 service plan and so forth. And there's a video that I'm going to, I'll get up and post at Third Rail Blog about this. It was a public hearing because they added another dollar tax to everybody's cell phones to raise a bunch of money to pay for this boondoggle of a consolidated dispatch center under 911 auspices as well. Part of the proceedings of this little cabal was, well, we need to go over the 911 bylaws and the 911 service plan. And the county administrator, unelected, highest paid official in the county, says, much like in the voice of the campfire girl, well, I was really excited to tell everybody about how we're going to be able to approve this, but Homeland Security believes they need to review and approve these bylaws and the service plan before this board can vote. So here we are in a county where you're trying to deal with 911 dispatch, emergency call center, where we live, and you have the people who live here sitting around a little board trying to move forward with their bylaws, but they're being told by an administrator that Big Brother needs to approve the document before you get to vote on it. So I guess that's my quick answer to the fireman who said, what did we cede? You ceded everything, buddy.
That's it. You ceded complete control of the fire department to Homeland Security in ways that are so unimaginable that it's hard for people to comprehend what happens when you take those Homeland Security dollars.
And there's YouTubes out there all over the place of people getting municipalities getting these Bearcats, these military assault vehicles that we built way too many of as part of the military industrial complex, and now they're just being spoon fed down the line to municipalities. So you know the score. You're listening to No Agenda Stream. You know the score. So you know what the reason we focus on what Corey is doing is it's a proof of concept. It's the get out of the ends logis business, everybody. You know, quit identifying yourself as a piece of property. You want to stop the shut up slave environment, then you need to start paying attention to how you identify yourself. And we have about 8 minutes left, 7 minutes left, Corey, before we're going to end this recording and get this posted for playback, hopefully.
And you know, I thought I'd just add to that about identifying yourself. Mm-hmm. If you are a citizen slavelet, it's more than just creating a common law ID and then saying, I'm not the person on the birth certificate. Mm-hmm. In Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, it says the state may not impair the obligation of a contract, even a bad contract that you make with the federal government that turns you into a slave. Those are contracts that you'll need to address and clear up. But the first step in being able to understand how that works and allowing your brain the tools to be able to comprehend and resist the lifetime of training and conditioning we've had is creating your own identification. That's the first step.
Yes, it is. And we're excited to have this new format on the No Agenda Stream, new in that it's just Corey and I, and there's no commercials, and we will be developing this format more and more. We're going to try and go live. We might end up pre-recording the first few shows just to while we get coordinated and so forth. We were a little spoiled with the way things were at RBN because we could just fire up the Skype and we were live. But there was a delay on this stream back then, and I'm glad this will eliminate the delay. I need to set up a crowdsourcing mechanism, Corey, so we can try and get some producers engaged in Agenda 31. We want to have people in the 3,100 plus counties in America helping report back or document in a directory form, if you will, how free is your county? What in your county? For instance, I'm going to go to.
Does the sheriff have an oath on file? Is there
some basics?
Some basics.
Do you have to immunize your children?
That's right.
Do you know who your grand jury is? Do you need a license to go hunting or fishing? Are you allowed to grow a garden in your yard?
Yeah.
Can you have
chickens? Did your sheriff attend the Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Association convention.
Have you ever attended the impanelment of your grand jury? Is the Fully Informed Jury Association active in your county? I mean, there's all kinds of things we can gauge in terms of how free a county is. And this is what's, I think, yet to really sink in with me, Corey, because I've only spent a limited time in Orange County ever. And it is, I think it's the most densely populated county in America.
It is, and OC Weekly, in an article about the district attorney's office, I mean, the politics here, the Orange County is a very small county, geographically speaking, it's very small, but it is the most densely populated county in the country, and it has a higher population than 20 of the states.
Yeah, that's in an article about the OC Orange County District Attorney. I guess he's had kind of a fiefdom there for a long time. I'll get this posted up at thirdrailblog.com. I'm going to have agenda31.org just redirect to thirdrailblog.com about this podcast, Corey, for now.
Fantastic.
That way we'll have at least a little bit of a connection there. And yeah, this article, it was published March 6, 2014. Now, OC Weekly is ostensibly the independent weekly rag in Orange County. And I don't know anybody there, even though I've been publishing an indie rag out in Iowa for 20 years. I hope that somebody over there starts paying attention to what you're doing, Corey, because I'm telling you what, you provide them just a fodder to increase your circulation. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I hope that they would look at me as not being one of the people in the crazy pile. I kind of get the sense that that's it, and that the problem is they have a difficult time in the very brief conversation I had with a reporter from OC Weekly when I was at the Kelly Thomas trial. He referred to the idea that there's a difference between the birth certificate and your given and surname as nonsense. And so that conversation lasted all of about 45 seconds and was dismissed. But I have a lot of respect for that reporter. He's done some great work, and hopefully we can get them to take the hypothetical seriously and consider the possibility that you don't have to identify yourself as the person on the birth certificate.
But meanwhile, you've had public defenders in the Superior Court tell you that they're aware of what you're doing and they think you've got something.
Yeah, yeah. The public defenders that were involved in the case with the sunflower seed incident have been incredibly supportive. They took the time to learn what my position was, and of course, it helped to be able to send them a letter from the jurisdiction of California 1849, where the rate of postage is set by the 37th Congress, and it's 3 cents for out-of-town postage.
Proof of concept done up there on YouTube. Right. You can check it out. It's out there. We've talked about that many times.
So there's lots of good things happening. I'm really excited as the show grows now. Pushing forward with this Agenda 31 and full time on the No Agenda stream. It's really exciting.
Yes, I concur. And we're going to try and ramp this thing up so that we can engage listeners on a more active level. We hope to be the place where people go to see people actually doing something instead of complaining about it.
A place that can be an antidote to Agenda 21, the UN's idea of taking away the right to private property, your right to self-determination. The right to liberty is what Agenda 21 is attacking. And Agenda 31, we're going to create the antidote for that.
It's everywhere you look. I was at, like I said last show, I was at a Chamber of Commerce function at John Deere's world headquarters, and the outro by the chamber leader was that the Gallup CEO is going to come speak in August, and it's no longer about peace or freedom, and it's no longer about owning your house or property. It's only about having a good job, Corey. I don't know if there's anything more than Agenda 21 than that agenda.
So, yeah.
So we'll see everybody next week. This is Todd McGreevy and Corey Ibe signing off on Agenda 31. Until next week, take care.